The Money Show.
Investment School.
David Shapiro, who is the Deputy Chairman at Sasfin Securities, is headmaster this evening of the Investment School, investigating tonight how your personality affects your investments. I mean, what are these biases, David? Your personal traits, your ability to withstand fear, stress, and pressure. What are we talking about when it comes to personality and investments?
Bruce, it's exactly that. I think our job is very easy. You know, selecting a good company is extremely easy. You don't have to be that clever. We know them. You can actually, a little kid can identify what are good companies. The problem is handling people's aspirations and handling their emotions. That becomes the difficulty. So particularly now, we're going through an extremely difficult period now. We hit a high in global markets on the 1st of January, and in the 3 to 4 months that have followed, the markets have gone down, taken down by a whole lot of factors. And it's the way that people respond during these periods that actually defines their success or not. So this is a very difficult time, and you have to learn to, you have to learn to get through these times. And that's what makes investing so interesting, is to see how people respond or react during these times.
Sometimes the best response is no response. Of course, it can end up being 1929 all over again at some point in the future, and you'll lose your shirt. And that would be a terrible strategy. But invariably over the last 20, 30 years or so, perhaps longer, the best response, I think, generally has been no response when it comes to an inflection point like we're feeling at the moment.
In fact, stay in the market. And if you go back in time and you look at how the market has performed, for generations, the chart goes from the bottom left hand to the top right hand.
It does.
Yes, there's a lot of ups and downs along the way. But, I mean, that's the trend. And yet when people look at it, they don't believe that it's going to last. And there's always this belief that somewhere along the line, they're going to fall in a heap. So Bruce, it's very important to be able to handle people's personalities. And that's why we become psychologists. And that's why there are so many books written about human behavior and how people respond during these times. Money changes personalities. And if you go into families, and you'll see that how many families don't talk to their, how many brothers don't talk to their brothers or their sisters, and all of this has arisen out of the inheritance, fights over the inheritance, or fights what to do with the inheritance, and so on. So we get, there's enormous amount of issues that we deal with, and lots of stories, and can go into them now. And I, if you want me just to ramble on here.
No, you're not rambling. I love your stories, David. I mean, you've got great real world examples of how money does either make or break families, connections. It has phenomenal power.
Yeah. Well, the best was the Sasol issue. Remember a couple of years ago during when Sasol collapsed, the oil price went down to, $40, $30. They had all the troubles in Louisiana. They were on the verge of bankruptcy. Were they going to have a rights issue? Were they not going to have a rights issue? Now, at that point, we were in no position to know whether they were going to get out of this trouble. The same thing happened to companies like Aspen as well. No one knew those conditions. We were in the depths of we were at the pandemic. No one knew whether we were going to get out of the pandemic. So you can't make a call on a share like Sasol. Where's it going to be? So you have to take a conservative view. So remember, the share price went all the way down to 27. And of course, months start to pass and things start to improve. We find vaccines and the markets start to ease and the share price goes up. And then you get everybody coming at you. I told you to buy Sasol at 27. I told you. They're now 57 or 75. And you say, yeah, but we couldn't make a call at that point. Yes, but I told you. It's you. And Bruce, there's this belief of great richness. In other words, people see this opportunity. They did think about it, but they never had the conviction to buy at that point. And they weren't firm enough to say, I want to buy them. I want them in my portfolio. We were all indifferent. But when it goes the other way, of course, we were to blame. But then you say to them, okay, it's on its mend. Buy them now. It's, nah, I've missed it. Nah, too late. You know, it's at 75 or wherever it was. Much too late. I'm not going to buy it. You know, where's it today? In the 300s, you know, even higher. So those are the kind of issues one has to deal with all the time. And, you know, with the Sasol, at that point, at that very low point, no one can really call it. It's not our fault. We don't know, you know, and yet the blame will always turn on us because no one wants to admit, I never really had the courage to actually go in and do it.
They put in a buy order and gave you a very clear and specific instruction or made a request politely to say, David, at 25 Rand, please buy me a million of these things or whatever the case is. It's not an instruction. You know, you can't expect other people to act by osmosis. Are there particular character traits, David, that are strong in the world of investments? I mean, there's something called extroversion, which sounds like an olive oil, but it's not.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. That there are different personality traits. I try to sort them out from the beginning. In other words, we know from whether to take a client on because we manage portfolios. So I manage other people's money, but you're able to detect or determine from a very early point whether or not you're going to have a problematical client or not. You know, someone is going to second guess you and question you and, you know, constantly nag at you. And we do that at a very early stage. You know, say, listen, I'm not a trader. This is what we do. You know, I say to people who come to me right from the beginning, all I do, my strategy is very simple. I buy you 20, 25 of the shares that I think are the world's best company. That's all I do. That's it. Nothing else. And I buy them according to themes. And if that's not what you want, if you want to go into derivatives, if you want to trade, if you want to do all of those, you know, I'm not the person. And the reason that I've gone that route is because I've suffered for nearly 50 years, you know, of dealing with people and their personalities and the issues that come with trying to build money and trying to build wealth. So, you know, lots of stories along the way, but it does take... If you're going to go into the market and you want to build your wealth, you've got to understand what the risks are. You've got to understand the animal that you're dealing with and, you know, how it changes. And, I mean, Bruce, even on a day-to-day, you know, on a day like today, we have no idea, you know, what the market's going to do in the morning, what it's going to do at midday, and how it's going to close, because those are the kind of swings that we're seeing in these very vibrant and violent markets. And you've got to have the character to get through that. And if you can manage your emotions, you'll do fine. If you can't, not the place for you to be.
David Shapiro, he is the Deputy Chairman at Sasfin Securities. He is with us this evening as Headmaster of the Investment School. Personalities, personality types and traits, and how it plays out in your investments. More on that in a moment.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa CIB, Africa's best bank for cash management and trade finance at the MEA Innovation Awards 2022. Absa's a registered FSP.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
Now, Adrian Gore will often talk about risk aversion and how we feel considerably worse losing a little bit of money than we do feel good about making quite a lot of money. When we make quite a lot of money, when stock markets go up 15-20%, we think we're geniuses. When stock markets go back 5% and fall back after a 20% gain in a year, we start feeling like it's the end of the world, and we may then start to act rashly and make some pretty dumb decisions. And that is what David Shapiro is trying to protect us against in a market which is fairly volatile at the moment. The JSE, which earlier this year peaked at about 77,000, maybe nearly 78,000 on the all-share index, has pulled back to 71,500 or thereabouts. In the bigger scheme of things, David Shapiro, it really shouldn't matter. But it does, because it undermines our every belief in what we think is real and true in the world of money and making money.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, I love what you said, you know, about what Adrian said, because people take their value of their investment at the highest level. That's their wealth, at the highest point it reached. And that high point was reached in January of this year. In fact, on the 1st of January, we had, I'm talking in global markets, that's when the markets made new highs. So people will value their wealth and say, I was worth so much. Therefore, today, I've lost 15 or 20%, whatever it is in rand, I don't know, in dollar terms and so on, maybe 10%. But they don't go back to 2020, 2019, 2018, et cetera, and see where they were as well. And it's a big issue around around that point. So the problem, Bruce, is that with today's technology, we're able to measure our wealth literally on a minute-to-minute basis. So we can look at the screen and know exactly what we're worth every second of the day kind of thing. And that's an absolute disaster, because the temptation to do that is so compelling. So... And as a result of that, we have to deal with those kind of emotions, you know, of a fall in the market. And I always say that it's very hard to find a long-term investor. Everybody comes and says, you know, I'm in this for the 5 years. I'm in this for 10 years. I'm in this for 15 years. And they say that until you get a period like we're going through now. As soon as you get a lunge in the market or something like that happens, of course, they go into panic mode and start worrying about whether this is going to erode or eliminate their wealth. So very important point that you did bring up. You know, just understand where you've come from and how you've done and where, you know, where we are at the moment.
How do you avoid this mindset of, and so self-destructive? It really is self-destructive. How do you not get into that space? Is it possible?
You've got to be clever about it. What do we do at the moment? How are we handling it? We look at the underlying businesses and, look at where we are invested in and analyze those and, you know, go through the companies and go through each company with a client and say, this is where we are. This is what the company's doing. I don't care what the market says. I'm not selling it. You know, the market is nothing more than a reflection of mass emotion, you know, people going in and out all the time. And to give you a wonderful example of what kind of situation we're in at the moment, and I really mean people are frenetic, they're very jittery and understandable. We've got problems in China, we've got the Fed worries about inflation, and we've got a war in Ukraine. So people are entitled to feel a little insecure. But yesterday, a trader at Citibank hit the wrong button and sent the Scandinavian market down 8%. Now, any rational person will say, look, there's something wrong with this. Maybe it is an error, etc. But it caused that butterfly effect. You know, everybody started to flap their wings and European markets came under severe pressure as everybody headed for the door on that news. And it was the same thing this morning. There was a report in China. I don't know, one of the CCTV, one of the stations reported that someone had been arrested, and they attributed it to being Jack Ma. It wasn't Jack Ma. In fact, this person had three syllables in his name, and the markets went tilt. They went down 8%, 9%, 10%. And that's the kind of markets we're in that we have to prevent against. So you've got to get to the bottom, and you've got to know what you're talking about. We can't be frivolous and we can't be ignorant about where we are. We've got to understand the problems, but you've got to talk people through, this is where you are, this is what we've got, these are the businesses in which we're invested. They're still doing very well. If you go and see, you know, if you go to the Ferrari showrooms, there's still people buying cars. They can't produce enough. If you go, you know, and so on, Microsoft is still selling. People are still doing these kind of things. So you have to get into the actual earnings and heart of a business and explain those businesses are fine. What's not fine at the moment is that markets are very volatile and uncertain.
Yeah, they are. And there's a Rudyard Kipling, and I know he is of an era, but a Rudyard Kipling poem called If. And it goes, if you can keep your head about you when all about you are losing theirs, and goes into a lot of detail, of course, about keeping calm in the face of huge adversity. And ultimately, that calmness in the face of adversity, not blind loyalty to a share or being married to a share or believing that you're a genius, but being calm in the face of chaos and uncertainty and being able to spot opportunities is a far more positive attribute than the panic mode, which most of us, I think, are prone to from time to time.
Bruce, there's, you know, I, as I do every year, I tuned into the Buffett, the Berkshire Hathaway AGM, which was on Saturday night. And I always do it. I've been doing it for now 16 years, just listening to them. And I think if ever you wanted to understand calmness and understand how people build wealth is to listen to these, oh, what's it, when you're 90, a nonagenarian, I think, both of them. I think
between, quite an old guy.
Between Charlie and Warren, they're 190 years. But what intrigued me was that during this quarter, Buffett or Berkshire put $51 billion into the market. Now, at no time did they think about where the market was going, how it was going to open, how it was going to close. And what they did is they looked at certain businesses and they said that at these levels, regardless of where the market is, these levels, they appear to be attractive. And the one and what was interesting is that Berkshire bought a big stake in Chevron, an oil company, also increased in a petroleum company called Occidental. And what intrigued me is they've taken their stake in Activision Blizzard, which is a gaming company, a computer gaming company, up to 9.5%. So they're the biggest shareholders. Now, that's at a time when everybody is running out of the market. They looked at the value and they said, the prices are right, we're going in. And $51 billion is no small amount. And I'm saying it's that calmness and certainty and understanding of where value is that makes them what they are and makes Berkshire what it is. So I think it was a prime example over the weekend of how to respond and how to react in these times.
David Shapiro, thank you so much for your wisdom this evening. As always, he is the Deputy Chairman at Sasfin Securities, David Shapiro. Everyone's favorite stockbroker this evening on The Money Show.